Good evening, and welcome to tonight's teleconference brought to you by the West Region of the National MS Society. All lines are currently in a listen-only mode. During the presentation, we will conduct several question and answer sessions. If you would like to ask a question, press 1 on your touch-tone keypad. Please try to ask questions that are general in nature and that might appeal to the larger group. Once your question is asked, your line will be remuted. Questions will be taken in the order that they are received. At the end of this 60-minute teleconference, we will conduct a brief 3-question survey over the phone. After the survey, you may end your line or stay on for an optional 15 minutes for further Q&A with the speaker. I would now like to turn the conference over to Piper Reynolds, Senior Manager of Program for the National MS Society Greater Northwest Chapter. You may begin.
Thank you, and thank you all so much for registering for our regional teleconference this evening. We're really pleased to have everyone on the line with us tonight. This teleconference is one of the many free and helpful programs and services available to people living with MS through the National MS Society. From support groups to care management, financial assistance to political advocacy, we are here to help and partner with you. Whether you are a person living with MS, a friend, or caregiver, the National MS Society is here to connect you to the information and resources you need. Contact us by calling 1-800-344-4867. Visual symptoms are common in people with MS. In fact, they are the first symptoms for many people. Dr. Eugene May of Neuro-Ophthalmic Consultants Northwest is with us this evening and will discuss how MS affects vision and eye movements and how ophthalmologists and neurologists evaluate and treat MS-related vision problems. Dr. May is a board-certified neurologist with fellowship training in neuro-ophthalmology. He has been practicing neuro-ophthalmology for 20 years, in Seattle for 15 years, at the Swedish Neuroscience Institute. Dr. Steve Hamilton and Dr. May run the MS Eye Clinic and are part of the MS Center at Swedish. Both Dr. May and Dr. Hamilton participate in MS treatment studies, but also take care of people with all varieties of neuro-ophthalmic conditions and participate in other research studies as well. Earlier this week, I emailed everyone a PowerPoint handout, which Dr. May will follow along during the teleconference this evening. I apologize if you didn't get that handout by email, or if you didn't get it, if you don't have email, I'll be sure to mail out to everybody who doesn't have email tomorrow so you can have that on hand. Following this teleconference, you'll receive an email or letter, if you do not have email, containing additional information about this evening's topic, as well as other programs and services available to you through the National MS Society. So I thank you again for being on the call this evening and would like to hand it off to Dr. May. You may begin, Dr. May.
Well, thank you very much, Piper, and thank you for everyone who has decided to attend this evening's teleconference. As Piper mentioned, I'm a neuro-ophthalmologist, and what that means is that I'm a neurologist who has special training in eye disorders, and I see people who have neurologic conditions that affect their vision. And that has particular relevance for people with multiple sclerosis, because as everyone on this phone call probably knows, multiple sclerosis very, very often affects people's vision. And tonight what we're going to do is talk about perhaps a couple of the most common ways that MS affects people's vision. And at the end of the talk, we're going to talk about at least a couple of important ways that neuro-ophthalmologists assess people's vision, at least people who have MS. If you got a slide set from Piper, you can follow along the talk with me. If you didn't get the slide set, feel free to listen along anyway. Hopefully, my presentation will make it clear what I'm talking about, even if you can't look at the pictures with me. For the first few minutes of the talk, what I'm going to be talking about is a condition called optic neuritis and other ways that MS can affect our vision or what we see. Then we're going to break for a few minutes for questions about optic neuritis. After that, I'm going to be talking about eye movements and how eye movements are affected by multiple sclerosis and symptoms that can result from that. And we'll talk, we'll have a couple of minutes for questions about that. Then after that, we'll talk about testing of vision and eye movements in people with MS. We'll break for questions after that and open up for questions just about anything that you would like to ask me. So without any further ado, let's start talking about MS and vision. And if you have the slide set, the first image that I'm going to be talking about is the picture of the brain and the eyes. And that's to remind us that MS can affect pretty much any part of the brain, of the central nervous system. And the visual pathway starts at the back of the eyeball where the optic nerve begins. And the visual pathway then heads all the way back to the back of the brain or the occipital lobe. And MS can cause inflammation anywhere along that visual pathway. But the other important part of the brain that MS can affect is at the base of the brain, the part of the brain called the brain stem, and the cerebellum, which sits right behind the brain stem. And those are the parts of the brain which control our eye movements. So when MS affects the visual pathways or the optic nerves or the pathways back to the occipital lobe, that causes blurred vision or what are called visual field defects, where there are areas in our vision where we can't see. When MS affects the base of the brain or the cerebellum, that causes problems with eye movements, where the eyes don't line up properly. That causes double vision. And then it also can cause problems with spontaneous eye movements or nystagmus, and that causes blurred vision and dizziness. The next picture shows us the myelin sheath, and that's to remind us that the predominant problem when people get inflammation in MS or relapses is that there's transient inflammation around the nerve cell, and that causes an MS relapse and an acute symptom. The next picture is a picture that shows the proposed pathophysiology of MS, which is how the immune cells create damage to the myelin around the nerve cells and cause transient symptoms. But also, when there's a lot of inflammation in the nervous system with an MS attack, it's not just the myelin that can get affected, but the nerve cell itself or the axon. When the myelin just gets affected and a person with MS has a relapse, the myelin can actually heal up again and the symptom of a relapse can improve. But when the axon actually gets damaged or the nerve cell itself gets damaged, then that can lead to permanent injury and permanent loss of function. In the case of the visual symptom or the optic nerve, for example, when a person has optic neuritis, more often than not, the damage is just to the myelin and the optic nerve gets better and vision recovers, but sometimes the inflammation causes damage to the axons or the nerve cells themselves, and that can lead to permanent loss of vision. The next slide shows the time course of multiple sclerosis. And you can see on that slide that most people with multiple sclerosis have what's called relapsing remitting multiple sclerosis, where attacks occur over the course of several years. In some cases, the attacks don't heal up completely, and people are left with persistent problems. In many cases of relapsing remitting multiple sclerosis, at some point down the line, people get worse, and that can cause secondary progression. In the case of the visual system, when people get secondary progressive MS, that often results in worsening vision in both eyes and sometimes progressive nystagmus or abnormal eye movements. Some people with primary progressive MS, that is MS that gets worse from the beginning without relapses, also develop progressively worse vision over time. So let's talk specifically about some visual manifestations of MS. If you look at the picture with the title that says optic neuritis, and you look at the face of the lady in the picture, you can see how blurred it is. And anyone who's had optic neuritis might recognize that that's how things look when you have optic neuritis. Optic neuritis is perhaps the most common symptom of multiple sclerosis. In up to half of all people with multiple sclerosis, it is the presenting symptom. So of all people with MS, up to half have optic neuritis as the first symptom. If you look at all people with MS, at some point, up to 80% of all people with MS have optic neuritis. The symptoms of optic neuritis are pretty easy to recognize. The most obvious symptom is loss of vision in one eye. There's typically an aching or sharp pain behind the eye. that is worse with eye movement. And that, for an eye doctor or a neurologist, is the most characteristic manifestation of the pain, is that it gets worse when a person moves the eye from side to side. And that's the case in about 90% of people with optic neuritis. About 10% of people with optic neuritis have no eye pain. And generally, optic neuritis runs its course over about 6 to 8 weeks. What's the level of vision of people with optic neuritis? Well, if you look at the next picture, where you can see the eye chart, that's called a Snellen chart, that you typically would find in an eye doctor's office, 20/20 vision is normal. 20/25 vision is less than normal, and as the numbers in the denominator go up, a person's vision gets worse. As you can see, most people with optic neuritis have vision in the 20/25 to 20/200 range. So vision with optic neuritis is usually pretty bad, but not terrible. But you can see that there's a minority of people who have really bad vision. You can see at the bottom of the chart, it says that there's 4% of people with optic neuritis have count fingers vision. That means that they can't even read the chart. They can only count the fingers of the examiner. 6% have hand motion vision. They can't even count fingers. They can only see a hand move. And 6% of people have either light perception or no light perception vision. So they can either barely see light or can't see light at all. So a minority of people with optic neuritis have really bad vision at presentation. But 10% at the top of the page there have 20/20 vision at presentation too, and still have optic neuritis. There are other symptoms and findings of optic neuritis, as you can see on the next page. There's what's called poor contrast sensitivity. So beyond just having blurred vision, things seem kind of hazy. And anyone who's had optic neuritis will concur that other than things just being blurry, it's almost like looking through a gauze or haze or fog. And that's what contrast sensitivity refers to. The two charts on that picture at the bottom left are charts that we use to test contrast sensitivity. They're faded letters and grids. People with optic neuritis have impaired color vision. The color that's hardest to see with optic neuritis is red. And on the top right is a visual field test. People with optic neuritis very commonly have visual field defects, most commonly in the center of the vision. There are spots, but there can be spots that are off-center as well. The next couple pictures show what an optic nerve looks like to an eye doctor or a neurologist who examines a patient with optic neuritis. When we look in the back of a person's eye with optic neuritis, sometimes the optic nerve looks normal, like you see in the first picture. That's a nice, clear picture of a normal-looking optic nerve. That says retrobulbar optic neuritis. The next picture says anterior optic neuritis, and that's because that optic nerve is a little bit swollen. And an anterior optic neuritis occurs when the inflammation in the optic nerve, when the MS inflammation is occurring right where the optic nerve enters the eye. And the retrobulbar optic neuritis has a normal-appearing optic nerve because the inflammation is occurring farther back in the optic nerve. You can see in the next couple pictures what MRIs look like in people with optic neuritis. We don't usually do MRIs in people with optic neuritis because you don't need to see what the optic nerve looks like when a patient has optic neuritis. But suffice it to say, the contrast that we give people during MRIs leaks into the optic nerve because the optic nerves are so inflamed. Typically, when people get optic neuritis, the pain resolves first within 7 to 10 days, and it's after that that the vision gradually gets better. And that's because with optic neuritis, like any other MS relapse, the inflammation just stops on its own for whatever reason that occurs in people with MS, and then the myelin starts rebuilding around the nerve cells. Vision usually improves over the course of 6 to 8 weeks, and 85 to 90% of people with optic neuritis get their vision back to pretty much what it was like at the beginning of the attack. So almost everybody with optic neuritis gets their vision back to what it was like before they had optic neuritis. If you look at the next slide, you can see what the visual acuity is of people 15 years after they had optic neuritis. And we get this data from a really important study that was done in the 1990s called the Optic Neuritis Treatment Trial. And I'll be talking about the Optic Neuritis Treatment Trial for a couple of minutes. It was a really important study in helping us understand multiple sclerosis and not just optic neuritis. You can see in the first two rows of that chart that 15 years after having optic neuritis, 85% of people have vision that's 20/25 or better in the eye that was affected. So by far, having optic neuritis does not have significant long-term implications on vision. A minority of people have poor vision in an eye that had optic neuritis. So that's good news. A little bit more information that we got from the optic neuritis treatment trial, and again, remember, this is the early 1990s that this study was done. The optic neuritis treatment trial looked at people with optic neuritis and compared three treatments. One was intravenous methylprednisolone, 1 gram per day for 3 days. The other treatment was oral prednisone, 60 milligrams a day for a week. And the third treatment was placebo. So back in the early 90s, we really didn't know how to treat MS relapses. This was before the days that people were getting intravenous methylprednisolone all the time. But the optic neuritis treatment trial showed us that intravenous methylprednisolone treatment resulted in a rapid improvement in symptoms compared to placebo. The other thing that we learned from the optic neuritis treatment trial was that oral prednisone also resulted in rapid improvement in the symptoms, but unfortunately, people who were treated with oral prednisone rather than intravenous methylprednisolone had an increased recurrence of optic neuritis after the treatment. So based on the results of the optic neuritis treatment trial, people with optic neuritis and, as a result, multiple sclerosis relapses are now treated with intravenous methylprednisolone regularly and almost never with oral prednisone, because it's thought that using prednisone, at least without intravenous methylprednisolone, may result in an increased rate of relapses down the line. The other thing we learned from the optic neuritis treatment trial was that the visual outcome of people who were treated with steroids was the same as the outcome of people treated with placebo. So we know that people with optic neuritis and probably with MS relapses will have the same outcome whether we treat them with steroids or not, but the relapse will resolve quicker with steroid treatment. So that's had really profound long-term impact on the way we treat people with MS. So moving on to the visual outcome slide, most people with optic neuritis, as I said, get pretty much back to normal with their vision, although a lot of people with optic neuritis still say that their vision isn't quite normal. It's slightly blurry. That's probably because they still have problems with contrast sensitivity, even though their visual acuity might be 20/20. Glasses don't fix this kind of problem, unfortunately. It's something that glasses can't correct, but it's still worth getting the best possible pair of glasses to correct your vision as much as possible after you get optic neuritis. Acutely, it sometimes helps to patch the eye that's affected with optic neuritis just to kind of avoid that discrepancy between the two eyes. But over time, it's best to try to use both eyes together. Shading the eye with optic neuritis sometimes makes things worse, but a lot of people after optic neuritis find that they're a bit light sensitive and actually like wearing sunglasses. Many of you are probably familiar with Uthoff's phenomenon, and that is when vision actually worsens when you get overheated. Sometimes vision worsens with fatigue, with hormonal fluctuations like in the menstrual cycle, or with emotional stress. That probably has to do with the effect of body temperature and other factors on nerve conduction through a demyelinated optic nerve. Those symptoms are always transient. They don't cause any permanent vision loss. So even if you get Uthoff's symptom, you don't have to worry that that's ever going to cause any permanent problem medicine Ampyra that we're using these days to treat gait dysfunction in people with MS frequently helps Uthoff symptom even in the eye. So I use it in people who have Uthoff symptom in their eyes. So what about when people get optic neuritis once? Does that mean they're going to get it again? And the answer is not necessarily. Optic neuritis is an MS relapse just like any other MS relapse. So if you get optic neuritis once, it doesn't mean you're going to get it again. It doesn't mean that your vision is going to worsen. MS relapses are luck of the draw and they're unpredictable. The only way to prevent an MS relapse is to be on MS disease-modifying therapy. So if you're diagnosed with MS, it's best to get on disease-modifying therapy to minimize the risk that you're going to get an attack of optic neuritis and potentially a permanent visual problem. People with progressive forms of MS sometimes develop worsening vision, but even people with secondary or primary progressive MS who have visual problems from MS rarely develop blindness. There are some people with MS who have really poor vision and who do develop blindness, but that's a very, very rare complication of multiple sclerosis. Moving on to the central visual system, behind the optic nerves, the visual pathways that head to the back of the brain are rarely affected. When those are affected, they cause what are called visual field defects. You can see a couple of pictures of those in the handouts. Visual field defects that occur in the brain occur in both eyes at the same time and are in the same part of the visual field in each eye. And you can see pictures of those in the handout. If you don't have the handout now, Piper will send you one and you can see pictures of those. So why don't we take a few minutes to take maybe 5 minutes of questions, and then after that we'll move on to the eye movement system.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the number 1 key on your phone. Okay, doctor, there are, looks like, probably about 12 or 15 questions in the queue. The first question is from Debbie. Please go ahead.
Hi, Dr. May. Thank you very much for your time this evening with the information.
Sure.
I just had a question regarding, I go to a neurological ophthalmologist, et cetera, and I've had the silicone plugs put in, and I've been on Restasis for about a year, a little over a year, and using the artificial lubricant teardrops 4 times a day, and everything seems to be, as far as with the diagnosis, if you will, that I have dry eye. It's not the MS. And, you know, the vision, you know, like you described, as far as, you know, the blurry, et cetera, almost like at times I'm almost think I'm seeing, like, with my eyes crossed, but they're not crossed, you know, but the blurry, and like you said, it does change, you know, throughout the day and everything like that. And I guess I'm just a little frustrated. I'm not sure, you know, really what to say to the doctor or to go for a second opinion or, you know, whatever it may be. But I know, like, the vision, it's just not right.
Mm-hmm. Well, a couple things. One is it sounds like you're being treated for dry eye. And dry eye can be a very frustrating problem in and of itself. Dry eye is not a symptom of MS. It's a very common symptom and a very common problem, but probably not a symptom of MS. Now, unless a person with MS has bilateral facial weakness, which is not very common, dry eye is probably a separate problem that you have and needs to be treated independently. And you need to go through several steps to get that treated. If one thing doesn't work, you need to try something else. Now, your neuro-ophthalmologist will know whether or not you've ever had optic neuritis or not. He'll know whether you have good optic nerve health or not, and should be able to explain to you whether or not your optic nerve health is affecting the quality of your vision. Because if you do have optic nerve problems, that will contribute to all of your visual symptoms in at some level. And as the day goes on, as you get tired, fatigue will make it harder for you to use your optic nerves if your optic nerve health is not perfect. Now, the other thing you mentioned is your crossed eye. If your eyes feel like they're crossed, they may be crossed, because as we'll talk about in a couple minutes, MS can affect your eye movements and your eye alignment. And if you feel like your eyes might be crossed, make sure that your neuro-ophthalmologist knows, because your neuro-ophthalmologist can assess your eye alignment and determine if that's happening, because that's something that can be treated too. So I think what you're telling me is a good example of the many ways that people with MS can have eye problems and eye symptoms. Number one, the dry eye. That's something that a lot of people get even without MS. Number two, you may have optic nerve problems that are contributing and need to be assessed to determine what role they're playing. And number three, you may also have an eye movement problem that needs to be assessed and perhaps treated. So I'd bring all of those things up with the neuro-ophthalmologist. And if you're not getting the answers you need, then, you know, depending on the situation, maybe go to someone who can give you the answers to each of those separate kind of issues.
Okay, doctor, did you want another question, or are you ready to move on?
Maybe one more.
Okay, that will be from June. Please go ahead.
Hi, doctor. I wanted to know when it's important to see a neuro-ophthalmologist as opposed to a regular ophthalmologist. If you've been nearsighted since childhood, you have a lot of changes in your vision anyway, so how do you know what's normal and what's related to the MS?
Well, that's a good question. You know, most people with multiple sclerosis don't ever wind up seeing a neuro-ophthalmologist because more often than not, it's pretty clear if a person with MS is having a visual symptom that's due to MS versus due to just regular old eye problems. So most of the people that we see with multiple sclerosis are having visual symptoms that may not be clear whether it's due to their MS or not, so we have to help sort it out, like in the person that we were just talking to. And the other people with MS that we see are people in whom we are tracking their visual function over time to help them and their neurologist determine how their MS is doing. And we can assess their optic nerve health and their eye movements as part of their more global assessment to determine how their MS is doing. So those two situations. Number one, helping sort out what's due to the eyes and what's due to the MS. Number two, tracking the MS. And I guess number three would be trying to help treat an MS-related visual problem. So if you have MS and the only eye problem you're having is that you're nearsighted and you need your nearsightedness treated, then seeing a regular ophthalmologist is fine. And most ophthalmologists are not going to be the least bit upset or concerned by the fact that you also happen to have MS. All right. So why don't we move on to eye movements, and we'll have plenty more time for questions as we move on. So as we talked about before, there are a couple of different ways that MS can affect eye movements. The part of the brain that can be affected by MS that causes eye movement abnormalities are the brain stem and the cerebellum, because those are the parts of the brain that contain nerve cells that are involved with the eye movements. If you have the slide set, you'll see that the three major types of eye movement abnormalities that I'm going to be talking about are fixation problems, nystagmus, and double vision. Fixation problems refers to difficulty holding the eyes still. The specific technical term for that is what's called saccadic intrusions. And, oh, it's misspelled. I'm sorry about that. That should be intrusions without the T. An intrusion is when the brain inserts an eye movement into fixation when there shouldn't be one, fixation being the attempt of your brain to hold your eyes still to look at something. A saccadic intrusion is when the brain makes a saccadic eye movement. A saccade is a very rapid, quick, horizontal eye movement. So saccadic intrusions are very low amplitude, horizontal, rapid eye movements that are back and forth. So people with saccadic intrusions, when they're trying to look straight ahead at something, make very rapid, quick, horizontal eye movements that are back and forth. Nystagmus is a different type of spontaneous eye movement where people's eyes oscillate rhythmically, sometimes back and forth horizontally, sometimes up and down. That's called vertical nystagmus. Sometimes people can even have what's called torsional nystagmus, where the eyes oscillate rhythmically in a torsional manner or rotate. The other thing that MS can do is throw the eyes out of line and cause double vision. The eyes can cross so that they're crossed in, they can cross out, and they can even cross up and down, giving all sorts of double vision that's either horizontal or vertical or angular. The most common cause of double vision in MS is what's called an internuclear ophthalmoplegia, or INO, and we're going to talk a little bit about that because it's so commonly seen in MS. So saccadic intrusions are often not symptomatic. When we see people with MS who have saccadic intrusions, it's not surprising because a lot of people with MS have had MS flare-ups or relapses in their brainstem or cerebellum that result in saccadic intrusions. But occasionally, saccadic intrusions are prominent when people have these little horizontal eye movements when they're trying to fixate or focus on something. When saccadic intrusions are symptomatic, they cause what's called oscillopsia or a sense of movement of what a person's looking at. They sometimes can just cause blurred vision. If that's the case, if saccadic intrusions cause blur or a sense of movement, they can be treated. The medicines that we use to treat them are either gabapentin or clonazepam. Gabapentin is also known as Neurontin. Clonazepam is also known as Klonopin. So people are on gabapentin and Klonopin for a number of different reasons. So I tend to use either of those medicines to treat saccadic intrusions. I use higher doses of them if people are already on them for other reasons. Excuse me. There are many, many different types of nystagmus that people can develop, nystagmus being the rhythmic oscillation of the eyes, either in the upward direction or the downward direction. People can have nystagmus just when they look to the side one way or the other. Many, many different types of nystagmus. People can develop nystagmus just when they're having a relapse. If that's the case, the nystagmus would be expected to improve when the relapse goes away. But other times, people can have nystagmus chronically, if they have progressive MS or if they have a relapse that doesn't get better. When people have nystagmus that doesn't get better, there are a couple of different ways that we can try to treat it to minimize the symptoms. The symptom of nystagmus being similar to saccadic intrusions, it can just cause blurred vision, but sometimes it can cause oscillopsia or a sense of movement. You can imagine if the eyes are oscillating rhythmically side to side, that one's sense of what one is looking at is going to be that what you're looking at moves side to side. If you have a vertical nystagmus, if your eyes are rhythmically moving up and down, you may perceive that what you're looking at is moving up and down as well. So if we can treat that symptom, if it's bothersome enough, then of course one would like to treat that symptom. So the couple different ways that we can treat that, one is with medication. There are various medications that we can use to settle down nystagmus. The medication that we choose to treat nystagmus depends on the type of nystagmus that a person has. So for example, if a person has downbeat nystagmus, if the eyes are beating downward, then I would choose a medicine called 4-aminopyridine or Ampyra, which, as many of you know, is what we use to treat gait disorders in MS. For a person who has upbeat nystagmus, for example, if the eyes beat upward, we use baclofen, which is another medicine we use for MS for people with spasticity. So what medicine we use to treat nystagmus depends on the type of nystagmus. We can use prisms to treat nystagmus. The prism is put in a person's glasses to shift the eyes in one direction or another. And you shift the eyes with the prism to get them into the angle of gaze or the position of gaze where the nystagmus is least so that the eyes don't oscillate as much. Finally, if the nystagmus is really severe and a patient is really suffering with blurred vision or sense of movement with their vision, then you can do surgery to weaken the eye muscles so that they don't move quite so much. But that's rarely, rarely necessary. Next, we'll talk about this condition called the intranuclear ophthalmoplegia. The intranuclear ophthalmoplegia, or INO, is a very common MS symptom. Many of you who are listening who have MS have probably had an INO. It's not as common as optic neuritis, but it's pretty common. It's so common that most neurologists and ophthalmologists who see a young person with an INO will be able to tell you right off that's somebody with MS. It's that common in MS. INOs occur when people have a relapse in their brainstem, in a particular part of the brainstem called the MLF, or the medial longitudinal fasciculus. That pathway in the brainstem connects two nuclei, which is why it's called an intranuclear ophthalmoplegia, ophthalmoplegia being the technical term for eyes that don't move properly. When a person has an INO, the eye that's involved can't turn in towards the nose completely, and the other eye has nystagmus. So a person feels dizzy with an INO, and they have double vision. Most people get an INO on one side, but you can also get an INO on both sides at the same time. There's a picture in the slide set that shows the anatomy of an INO in the brainstem. INOs, if they occur with a relapse, get better on their own. If not, they can be treated with prism if they result in significant double vision, and surgery to line the eyes up if the double vision doesn't go away. There are other ways that MS can cause double vision. When MS causes a damage in the brainstem that doesn't get better and the eyes are thrown out of line either side to side or up and down and they stay out of line, we use prism in glasses to straighten out images so that a person sees single. If prisms don't work, or if a person doesn't want to be in prism for an extended period of time, then we always have the option of doing eye muscle surgery to straighten out the eyes. Again, that's not frequently necessary in people with MS, but it is an option that we use sometimes in people who have intractable double vision. So once again, we can address the issue of vision and fatigue. Just like Uthoff symptom can affect vision in people who've had optic neuritis, when people have blurred vision from nystagmus or oscillopsia or have double vision, when they get tired or overheated, or in women during certain parts of their menstrual cycle, they can get worse double vision and blurred vision from oscillopsia. All of that is very, very common. Now, what do you do about that? Well, that's kind of a hard issue to deal with. My best recommendation to people in those situations is obviously try to identify what it is that makes you worse. If it's fatigue, you got to treat fatigue and avoid fatigue and do whatever it is to maximize your energy conservation. If it's overheating, you got to minimize overheating, use cooling vests, drink cool liquids, et cetera, et cetera. If it occurs with menstrual cycle, then try to modify the menstrual cycle insofar as possible. The other thing to keep in mind is when you have visual problems, it makes fatigue worse. So if you have blurred vision or if you have oscillopsia, this sense of movement, it makes you tired because you're constantly struggling against your eyes. So you do want to see your eye doctor or a neuro-ophthalmologist if you need to see what you can do to minimize the visual problems that you're having to minimize the fatigue that you have. We also don't want to forget that a lot of medications that people with multiple sclerosis take can make vision worse. If you're on medicines that make you sleepy, if you're on seizure medicines or headache medicines or pain medicines, that can make your vision blurrier and can make double vision worse and can actually make nystagmus worse too. So when I see people with MS who are having visual problems, we make a really concerted effort to minimize their medication burden and have them on as low a dose of medications as possible to try to make their visual symptoms as least as possible. Okay, so why don't we take 5 minutes and talk about eye movements, maybe some questions about that, and then we'll move on to the last section.
Okay, again, ladies and gentlemen, you may press the number one key on your phone to ask a question. There are 10 questions in queue, and the first question is from Chris. Please go ahead.
Hello, doctor. Thank you for giving us your time tonight.
Thank you.
I have fixation problems. I had it for 15 years with nystagmus, and I have recently been prescribed low-dose naltrexone for my mobility, and it really helps my numbness and my ability, but I'm finding that it makes it more difficult to fixate on objects. Is that normal? It floods endorphins, I am told. Would that make the fixation worse?
You know, I have not heard that specifically, that naltrexone makes fixation abnormalities or nystagmus worse. Quite honestly, our understanding of the pharmacology of the eye movement system is very primitive. So I can't tell you what the pharmacologic effects of naltrexone on the eye movement system are. So I think it's important that you recognize that you're being on naltrexone has made your eye symptoms worse. That's an important thing for your neurologist to know. How long have you been on it now?
One moment while I retrieve her line.
That's okay. I mean, you want to make sure that your neurologist knows that your eye symptoms are worse. It may be something that will settle down the longer that you're on it. You know, it may be a reason to get off the naltrexone and try something else. But that's an important observation. It's something that I will certainly keep in mind and will keep my eyes open to see if other people are reporting a similar thing.
Okay, and there is a question from Anne. Please go ahead.
Okay.
Anne, your line is live. Please go ahead with your question.
Is it Deanne?
We'll take you. Go ahead.
Hi. I wake up in the middle of the night, and when my eyes are still closed, they move very rapidly. And when I wake up first thing in the morning, before I've opened my eyes, they are shaking just uncontrollably. What is that? It doesn't happen during the day, only when I'm first waking up.
And you have MS?
Yes, I do.
And no other eye movement problems?
Well, I had the initial symptom of losing my sight in my left eye last October, and that's where it was discovered that I had MS, and I've been on Copaxone since mid-April.
Mm-hmm.
But the rapid eye movement has been about a month only, and it's in the middle of the night when I wake up, and it won't stop. It's just before I open my eyes.
You know, I can't tell you offhand. You'd need to have somebody examine you and look at your eye movements and talk to you in a lot more detail about what's going on and see what your eyes look like. That may very well be an MS symptom. You know, it probably is, but it doesn't sound like anything else offhand to me. But, you know, you should definitely let your neurologist know about that and have your neurologist at least take a look at your eyes and put that in the context of what they know about you and what's going on with your MS.
Okay, doctor. And did you want another question or are you ready to move on?
We have time for one more.
Okay. The next question will be from Lesham. Please go ahead.
Hello, doctor. About a week ago, I had a problem with inflammation of the wall around the eye, and I developed what felt like a fever over the eye, and I had difficulty moving the eye up and down, and it was still in very badly. So when I went in to have the eye examined, doctor told me about a condition, but I can't remember the name of the condition. So now it's been 1 week. I was there yesterday to see him. He gives me steroid to put in the eye and the oral steroid. But now I notice sensitivity to light. I have to use only one light in my home because I'm very sensitive to the light. Is that normal?
Well, you know, I can't tell you not knowing what's going on with you. You really need to make sure that you follow up with your eye doctors and let them know exactly what symptoms you're experiencing. And they would be able to tell you whether your response to treatment is appropriate or not. Because it really is impossible for me to say. Definitely, if you feel like you're not responding adequately to treatment or if something doesn't seem right, make sure that the doctors who are caring for you know what's going on, because it's just really hard for me to know for sure what this is all about. All right? Okay, so let's talk a little bit about testing in people with MS. And then once I talk about testing, we're going to do a couple of survey questions, and then we're going to have 15 more minutes for questions about anything that you guys want to hear about multiple sclerosis and vision. The section about testing is mostly directed at what we call the MS Eye Clinic. And that's a clinic that we have set up, and there are a few others in the country where we have dedicated specific time to just see people who are living with MS and evaluating their visual systems. And we feel that this is important because there are really just a few basic things that we need to know about the vision in people with multiple sclerosis to determine how they're doing and what needs to be done to try to make their visual symptoms better. So what we do in our MSI clinic is check visual acuity. That's on that regular Snellen chart. We check low contrast visual acuity. That's to check contrast sensitivity. You remember we talked earlier about how contrast vision is affected in MS independent of visual acuity. We check color vision. We check visual fields. We do a complete eye exam. We dilate people's eyes and look at their eyes and make sure nothing else is going on with their vision. We look at people's eye movements as well. And the one other thing that we do that I'm going to spend a couple more minutes talking about is a test that's called the OCT. And many of you have probably had an OCT, perhaps as part of an MS research study, maybe for other reasons, but perhaps as part of an evaluation of your multiple sclerosis. And what OCT is what's called ocular coherence tomography or optical coherence tomography, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. And the whole point of doing optical coherence tomography is to check the health of a person's optic nerve and look at the health of the optic nerve as a reflection of the health of the whole brain. And we've been learning over the past several years through many, many really good research studies that the health of a person's optic nerve with MS really is a good reflection of the health of the whole brain. And this particular tool, the OCT, is giving us increasing information about that. As you can see on the slide here, people with progressive MS seem to have progressive optic neuropathy, and by measuring the health of the optic nerve, we may be able to tell how rapidly the MS is progressing in people with MS. So if you look at the slide with the picture of a doctor and a patient with that white machine, that is an OCT. It says ocular coherence tomography, but it's actually optical coherence tomography. And the three pictures on the bottom of that slide are really useful. So if you don't have the slide set, please make sure you ask for it from Piper, because it'll help you understand what an OCT does. The picture on the bottom left is a cross-section of an eye, and it shows how the optic nerve starts off in the retina and leaves the back of the eye. And there are several layers in the back of the eye. The most superficial layer is the optic nerve layer. And what the OCT does is actually measures the thickness of the optic nerve in the retina in the eyeball. So by using the OCT, which is a laser, we can actually measure the thickness or the health of the optic nerve in the eyeball. So we're actually measuring the health of a part of the brain, excuse me, just by looking in the eye. There's a picture in the slide set of an OCT of a normal eye. This is a person with MS who's never had optic neuritis, who is doing very well, has relapsing remitting MS, but hardly has ever any problems at all. And it shows that the optic nerve health is normal in both eyes. If you have a picture of the slide set, you can see that in the middle of the picture of the OCT report, there are two green circles, or four green circles actually, and green is good, green like go, that means good. There's good optic nerve health all the way around the back of the eye. In the next slide, you see three OCT reports. And in that OCT, you can see that there's a right optic nerve and the left optic nerve. This particular individual had optic neuritis in the right eye at the time of the first OCT, which is all the way on the left side of the page. And you can see that the right eye OCT is on the left side of the picture, and initially, the circle on the left side of the page looks mostly green, but as you go to the next OCT, which is about 3 months later, and the next OCT, which is 3 months after that, more and more of that circle turns red, which means that after optic neuritis, that person was losing optic nerve fibers. So optic neuritis in that particular individual caused progressive loss of optic nerve fibers. It took a while for the optic nerve fibers to die off, but they did over the course of about 6 months. And that's a pretty typical pattern of what happens after optic neuritis. Even if a person's vision recovers, there is some damage done to the optic nerve. In the other eye, the left eye in this individual, this person already had optic neuritis in the left eye some years before, so you can see that in the left eye, which is on the right side of the picture, that circle already has some redness on the right side of the circle. So that left optic nerve was already damaged, and that circle stays pretty much the same from picture to picture, from the first OCT to the second OCT 3 months later, and to the final OCT on the right side of the page. Now the next slide shows a person with a progressive form of MS, and this slide is too small for me to see, but I think it's over the course of 1 or 2 years. You can see that both optic nerves in this individual show progressive loss of nerve fibers over the course of time, which is very typical in a person with a progressive form of MS. Even though this person actually had 20/20 vision, could see very well, had normal visual fields, they were still losing optic nerve fibers over time, which is an indicator of what happens with progressive MS. There's dropout of nerve fibers over time, and the OCT test was an indicator of this, and it's an easy way to get an assessment of what's going on in the nervous system in general. So how are we using OCT these days? Well, first and foremost, it's a simple way to measure optic nerve damage. We can see the optic nerve damage as it happens after a person has optic neuritis. We can follow it over time, either after optic neuritis or in people who have progressive multiple sclerosis, to track the changes in the nervous system over time. This helps neurologists determine if their patients have progressive MS or not. We're using OCT increasingly in MS research studies to determine if the medications that we're using to treat MS are helpful in limiting the progression of MS. So increasingly over the past few years, OCT is becoming increasingly helpful, not only clinically to follow optic nerve health, but also helping neurologists track MS, but also in research to help us determine if medications are effective. So then the last question that I wanted to add, which we have already addressed to a certain extent in the questions, is why a neuro-ophthalmologist? Why would somebody want to see a neuro-ophthalmologist? And I think we pretty much have already addressed that in the extent that if you are seeing an ophthalmologist and it is not clear if your visual problem is due to MS or if it's just a regular eye problem, then you probably should see a neuro-ophthalmologist. If there is a neurologic visual problem that you have that might be treated, that your ophthalmologist can't treat or your neurologist can't treat, then you should see a neuro-ophthalmologist as well. And finally, if for whatever reason you don't feel like you're getting the answer that you need, then you should see a neuro-ophthalmologist one way or the other. So hopefully that addresses most of the issues that we have, and that leaves us with 5 minutes for questions about maybe OCT or testing in the MSI clinic. Then we will do the three survey questions, and we'll leave maybe 15 minutes for open-ended questions. How about that?
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, you can press the number 1 key in order to ask a question at this time. There are 8 questions in queue. The first question is from Michelle. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you so much for doing this talk tonight. I had a very severe episode of optic neuritis in November of 2005. Where my eye went completely dark. And by 16 months, then I started getting light in it. And I finally, about a year and a half ago, had an OCT test. And I do have where most of it is red. And so I'm curious, how often should I have an OCT test? And is there, with an OCT test, will it show that, or is it even possible once it's red that things are remyelinating again?
Well, you know what, the OCT, first of all, the OCT looks at the health of the axons or of the nerve cells in the optic nerve. So it's not going to tell us whether the nerve cells are getting remyelinated or not. All it tells us is whether there's been damage to the axons or not. So if a person has optic neuritis and there is no damage to the axons and there's remyelination, the OCT is going to stay normal. There will be no permanent damage to any nerve cells. Now, that happens sometimes in people with MS where the OCT remains normal, but usually not. So even in people with optic neuritis who recover completely, who say, yeah, my vision's fine, I notice nothing wrong after optic neuritis, there's usually some damage to axons that we can pick up on the OCT. But it doesn't measure remyelination. All it measures is axon loss. Now, in a case like yours, where there's been axon damage and it's been years, there probably won't be any change in the OCT at all over this period of time in the eye that was affected. So I don't know your whole story. I don't know what happened to the other eye. But in your case, your neurologist and your neuro-ophthalmologist are probably going to be most interested in following the OCT in the other eye. Because following the OCT in the eye that was not affected by optic neuritis is going to give them the most information about how your MS is doing. If there is gradual loss of nerve fibers in the eye that was not affected by optic neuritis, that will be an indicator that your MS may be progressing. If the other optic nerve remains perfectly stable over the years, that will be the best indicator that your MS is more stable. So quite honestly, following the OCT in the eye that was severely affected that's all red is probably not going to be all that useful at this point. So without knowing your case specifically, I can't tell you for sure, but that's at least my general sense of the situation. Hope that makes sense.
Okay, and doctor, did you want to take another question?
Yeah, we have time for at least one more before we do the three survey questions, yeah.
Okay, the next question will be from Eileen. Please go ahead.
Thank you, doctor, for this discussion. I'm curious if you need to be, if your MS needs to be active to see whether you have to be in the middle of an episode or if you're in a regression time that your symptoms will show.
Visual symptoms?
Yes. If going to have your eyes checked is only valuable if you're in the middle of a if you're in the middle of a relapse, or if you're not in the middle of a relapse, will the symptoms not show up?
Oh no! People with MS can have visual symptoms during a relapse, and they can have visual symptoms if they've recovered from a relapse incompletely. And people with progressive forms of MS who are not having relapses can also have visual symptoms. So usually it's not all that helpful necessarily to see a neuro-ophthalmologist specifically during a relapse if you have MS and we know you're having a relapse, because, you know, if you have a relapse, we just kind of wait until the relapse is over and hopefully it all gets better and we don't have to worry about it. It'd be more important to see a neuro-ophthalmologist if you don't recover completely from a relapse, and we need to figure out, well, what are we going to do to help you with whatever visual symptom you might be left with? Or you would see a neuro-ophthalmologist if you have chronic persistent symptoms from a progressive form of MS. So more often than not, you wouldn't see a neuro-ophthalmologist in the midst of a relapse. You'd wait for it to get better. Now, there are situations, and I saw one yesterday, of a person with MS who was having visual symptoms, and it wasn't clear whether or not the symptoms were from MS or not. And so we had to see her because it wasn't clear that she was having optic neuritis or not. And as it turned out, she was having optic neuritis, but it wasn't clear. So I saw her in the midst of a relapse, only because we didn't know for sure that she was having a relapse. Another similar case, many of you may be on Gilenya, which is a medicine that you may know can cause retinal damage. So people who are on Gilenya, if they start getting blurred vision, we need to see them, because if the Gilenya is causing problems with the retina, we need to stop the Gilenya. And people who are on Gilenya can get optic neuritis, and if their vision gets blurred, it sometimes takes a neuro-ophthalmologist to determine whether or not the blurred vision is due to optic neuritis or to toxicity from Gilenya. So that's another example where if a person with MS is getting acute visual symptoms, you do need to come in and see somebody and have things sorted out. Okay, I hope that answers that question.
Thank you very much.
Take the survey questions and then do open it up for 15 more minutes.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, please hold for a brief polling session. Okay, in response to the following statement, please press 1 for yes, 2 for no, 3 for somewhat, or 4 for not sure. For this statement, this teleconference provided me with new and useful information about how MS affects the eye. Press 1 for yes, 2 for no, 3 for somewhat, and 4 for not sure. This teleconference provided me with new and useful information about how MS affects the eye. Polling is now closed for this question. Please hold while we prepare the next question. For the next question, this teleconference clearly explained how MS-related vision problems are treated. Press 1 for yes, 2 for no, 3 for somewhat, or 4 for not sure. This teleconference clearly explained how MS-related vision problems are treated. Press 1 for yes, 2 for no, 3 for somewhat, or 4 for not sure. Polling is now closed for this question. Please hold while we prepare the last question. For the last question, I learned at least one helpful thing about MS-related vision problems that will help me manage my symptoms better. Press 1 for yes, 2 for no, 3 for somewhat, or 4 for not sure. I learned at least one helpful thing about MS-related vision problems that will help me manage my symptoms better. Press 1 for yes, 2 for no, 3 for somewhat, or 4 for not sure. Okay, this concludes our polling session. And, Doctor, did you want to begin a 15-minute Q&A?
Sure.
Okay. Yep. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the number 1 key on your phone. Okay, there are 15 questions in queue, and the first question is from Tina. Please go ahead.
Hi, I've had my eyes, how they look in the back, to look at your optic nerve. I have the little yellow dot, and I was told that my nerve is soft. I don't understand what that means.
Yeah, you know, I don't know what the term soft specifically refers to. That's definitely not a standard way of describing what might happen to an optic nerve in a person with MS. The couple of terms that we typically use technically in describing what might happen to an optic nerve in a person with MS, most commonly in a person who's had MS, we say that an optic nerve might appear pale, P-A-L-E, after optic neuritis. So even when people have optic neuritis and recover completely, you remember how I said that there still may be some damage to the optic nerve? Even though a person gets better, we can still detect damage on the OCT. We've known for a long time that optic nerves are damaged, even though people recover, because when we look at the back of the eye, we can see that the optic nerves are pale. And optic nerves look pale when some of the nerve fibers are damaged permanently. So I can't be sure what the doctor was referring to when they said that your optic nerve was soft, but maybe they were referring to the fact that the nerve was pale. The other term for that is pallor, optic nerve pallor, P-A-L-L-O-R, where the nerve looks whitish compared to the normal kind of reddish or brownish appearance of the optic nerve. When there is severe damage to the optic nerve, when it's more than just pale, we sometimes call it atrophic, when there's atrophy of the optic nerve. So that's when there's really a lot of damage to the optic nerve. That's called optic atrophy. Sometimes acutely, when a person has optic neuritis, I showed a picture of that, when the front part of the optic nerve is inflamed, it's swollen. So that's optic nerve swelling. But I kind of doubt that's what the doctor was referring to. But the most common finding in a person with MS, either with progressive MS or with a who has had optic neuritis, would be that the optic nerve is pale. All right, so maybe next question.
Okay, the next question will be from Clint. Please go ahead.
Yes, it's hard for me. I work on computers to look at a white screen with black letters on it, and so like in Unix, I try to go a dark color with a lighter shade of that same color as the text, and it's easier on my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Is that high or low contrast problems?
Well, b- black lettering on a white screen, that's the highest contrast you can get. So really dark, dark black on a white, white screen with a sharp edge, that's highest contrast. Now, that's the easiest letters for people to see with MS, with or without optic neuritis. Now, all that being said, that's not necessarily what people with MS are most comfortable with. And I don't think anyone understands why that is. And the case in point, or the proof in the pudding, depending on how you look at it, is that a lot of people with MS and a lot of people with optic neuritis wear sunglasses, and that makes no sense whatsoever. Because if you have optic neuritis or you have MS, it would make most sense that you want more light to come in your eyes. But people with optic neuritis frequently don't like bright light or don't like that bright background on those dark letters, and I don't know why. And I don't think anyone knows why. So I don't think we fully understand why different individuals feel better or function better with various levels of contrast when they read and look at computer screens. So I think a lot more work needs to be done in that area for us to figure out what are the combination of things that make certain people with various types of optic nerve problems and eye movement problems want certain backgrounds and fonts and letters. So my recommendation to people in a situation like yours is that I don't know, and you got to kind of figure it out on your own. And honestly, people come up with all sorts of different combinations of background colors and font colors and tinting on glasses. Most people, it's not very complicated, but some people really work hard at finding out what works for them. So the simple answer is people with MS who have optic neuritis or who have lesions in the visual part of their brain have low contrast vision that is not as good as normal. A different question is, what kind of contrast is best for them to see? And that varies, both in color and tinting. And if you have the luxury of having a system or a computer system where you can vary color and size and contrast a lot, then play around with it and find out what works for you. And excuse me. And if you're someone who wants to shade your glasses, there are all sorts of great shades that you can try. And you go to an optical shop and try different shades and look at a computer screen and look at fluorescent lights and see what works best for you and see what you're most comfortable with. And no one can tell you what's going to work for you. And you got to pretty much find out for yourself because everybody's different along those lines. Okay.
Okay, and the next question is from Aaron. Please go ahead. Aaron, your line is live. Please go ahead with your question. Okay, and there's a question in queue from Steve. Please go ahead.
Good evening.
Hello.
About 4 years ago, I had an episode where I lost the vision or a lot of the vision in my right eye. After a period of time, the vision came back. 2 years went by, and I had another episode where I lost 80% of the vision in my right eye. I can see a little bit in the top left-hand corner, and that's about it. What are my chances, and when will my left eye be affected?
Well, you know, it's unpredictable, and you definitely have MS?
Relapsing, remitting.
Okay. It's unpredictable. You know, when a person has optic neuritis once with MS, it is not an indicator that he or she will necessarily ever get optic neuritis again. You're just as likely to get any other attack of MS. So my recommendation in a person with optic neuritis is if you have optic neuritis and you have MS, you got to get on disease-modifying therapy and make sure your neurologist is on top of you and that your MS is under the best control it can possibly be under. And that will minimize the chance that you get optic neuritis again, much less any other attack of MS. So, you know, there are pretty good statistics that go back 100 years now that show that blindness is just a rare complication of MS. It hardly ever happens. So it's pretty unlikely that you're going to get optic neuritis again, much less so many times or so severe that you're going to lose vision in either or both eyes to the extent that you're going to be functionally limited. Unfortunately, it's possible, but it's very unlikely. And especially in these days where we have disease-modifying therapy available, people hardly ever lose vision to that level. And so I think that, one, it's unlikely that it's going to happen again, but it could. And it's even less likely to happen as long as you stay on top of your treatment with your neurologist and, you make sure that your treatment is working insofar as possible. All right. Maybe a couple more.
Okay. The next question is from Shirley. Please go ahead.
Hi, Doctor.
Hello.
Very interesting seminar thing or
good.
Conference.
Good.
I never had optic neuritis. My problem started about 1980, and it turned out I have uveitis, which
mm-hmm.
is a sister of optic neuritis.
Right.
And can you tell me, will I develop optic neuritis in addition to the uveitis? Or will it just be, and it's continual?
Oh, really?
I go to the ophthalmologist about every 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I did get injections in the upper part of the eye to help maintain the uveitis.
Mm-hmm.
But that's been several years ago.
Yeah. Do you know what kind of uveitis you have?
Well, I went to Virginia Mason in Seattle.
Yeah.
And they told me it was panuveitis.
Oh, yeah.
But that was, like I said, 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm doing very well with it, but I do have Econopred. I started out with the Pred Forte or the Decadron.
Yeah.
And then they discontinued that, and now I'm on the Econopred. And I just use that in my eyes every day, and it seems to help.
Okay. Well, just for the edification of everybody else on the call, uveitis is the term that we use for inflammation of more or less the central soft tissue in the eye. So when you hear doctors talking about something with the suffix itis, I-T-I-S, that means that something is inflamed. So when we say optic neuritis, for example, that means the optic nerve is inflamed. And when we say uveitis, that means the uvea is inflamed. And the uvea is the major soft tissue in the eye. And uveitis is not a common condition. Panuveitis, which Shirley is talking about, means that all of the soft tissue in the eye is inflamed. Panuveitis is not common in MS. There is a type of uveitis that we see sometimes in people with MS, and that is what's called pars planitis, and that is the part of the eye called the pars plana gets inflamed. You sometimes see that before people develop MS, and you sometimes see that in people with MS. So I would say that if you had pars planitis, I would say, oh, yeah, people with MS get pars planitis. I don't know why, but they do. We see it all the time. No one knows for sure why a person with MS gets pars planitis, because MS is supposed to be a condition of the central nervous system, not an eye condition, but it's very well known that people with MS get pars planitis. And that may be because, in fact, the tissues in the pars plana are formed embryologically or in the embryo similar to the nervous system. So they may be immunologically the same. But suffice it to say, panuveitis is not very common in MS. So I'm not sure whether you are one of the unlucky few who happens to have two rare conditions that just need to be treated separately, not knowing for sure whether there's really a relation. So I would say you have panuveitis. I would in no way think that that means that you're going to develop optic neuritis. I think that's just a a fluke and probably unrelated. Again, I don't know your case. I can't tell you for sure. Can't tell you for sure that you've not had pars planitis and that it's unrelated. But if you have panuveitis, I would not say that that is an indicator that you're going to have optic neuritis. Okay, maybe one more question.
Okay, the last question will be from Mary. Please go ahead.
Hi, I just actually have just a quick question. Where can you have an OCT test?
Most eye doctors these days have OCTs, and the reason is that OCT is probably used more to look at the retina than it is to look at the optic nerve, and most eye doctors find it very, very useful to do OCTs of the retina in people who they are suspicious might have some sort of retina problem. What you might want to do is talk to your neurologist and ask your neurologist, do you think it would be helpful for me to have an OCT to get a baseline and see what my optic nerve health is? OCT has not yet necessarily reached prime time in MS care. We in the MSI clinic here in Seattle are doing OCTs on referral from most of the MS centers in Seattle and following people for a couple of years for their MS neurologists. We're doing it for MS research studies. So a lot of the general neurologists who are following MS patients aren't necessarily getting OCTs on their patients. So discuss with your neurologist whether or not they think an OCT might be helpful. And your neurologist may say, no, we're not doing that yet. We need more data. We need to see. Or they may say, yeah, that's a good idea for a baseline. Let's see what it looks like. But you wouldn't want to go to your ophthalmologist and say, I need an OCT for my MS. You want to get it through your neurologist, who would refer you to an ophthalmologist if your neurologist would think that it would be helpful as part of your MS management. So I think that should do it. And once again, thank you all very, very much for listening to me. I love to tell people about what I do, and hopefully that provided you with some additional information. And please, if you are having symptoms with your eyes that are not being addressed, ask your neurologist or ophthalmologist to have you see a neuro-ophthalmologist, and we can hopefully provide you with some additional insight into what's going on with you. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Eugene May, and to the National MS Society. And thank you all for your participation. This concludes your call. You may all disconnect.